Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
For 12:30, in place of observations today, Mike Tenenbaum will join us. He's on our draft coverage, 7 o'clock on Thursday, right here on 98.7 ESPN. Before we bring in Andy from Merrick with our trivia of the day, I cannot tell you how much I am looking forward to the mock draft, 3:30 ESPN with the beat reporters. You know why I'm looking forward to that unbelievably, Rick, today, 3:30?
Because you love Jordan Renan.
Well, I do love Jordan Renan, but it goes deeper than that. Jordan Renan apparently has completely butchered his hair. Like, he looks horrendous. He has not shown it to everyone. Every video he's done, he has a hat on. And he said today they're making him do the mock draft with his head completely revealed. So I cannot wait to see the job that he has done on himself here.
But he didn't do it on himself, Dave. It wasn't
His wife butchered the haircut?
Yes.
Well, regardless of who did it, I can't wait to see the result of it.
No, I can't wait. That should have been. We should have got a cacaw for that. That's breaking news.
It's breaking
I haven't seen
news.
It yet. That's breaking news.
He'll go early on, obviously, because it starts at 3:30. Giants go fourth. So in the first 10 minutes, you're going to see that beautiful head of hair of one Jordan Renan.
I would say, in all honesty, I mean, I haven't had a haircut. I don't think anyone's had a haircut recently.
Nope.
I mean, my neck hair's grown into, I mean, I look like, I mean, a werewolf at this point. But
I'm braiding my
hair. Did the neck hair connect to the beard yet?
Yeah, I'm close.
I'm getting close too. I'm zeroing in on that right now.
The only one really that can, I mean, that's safe during the pandemic is probably Mark Davis. I mean, you just
I'm sure it looks great. Yeah.
Just put the bowl on and line it up.
So, Mark, what do you want? You want the salad bowl? What do you want? Pasta bowl? What are we feeling today?
He probably has product in there. He looks unbelievable. He's like a Vidal Sassoon model the way he looks.
I'm going to change my look. Give me the salad bowl.
Yeah. Soup bowl. Give me the soup bowl this time.
I'm feeling wild. Give me the soup bowl.
All right. So Renan is going to be on the mock draft and his new do at 3:30 today. All right. Are you ready to bring in Andy from Merrick with that trivia question of the day?
Yeah, of course I am. I love this segment.
Okay, well, let's go. Andy from Merrick, you're next up on 98.7.
Good morning, guys. 2 days to the draft.
Yeah, we can't wait. Thank God.
All right. As always, we'll start off with Chris's question first. He nailed it with Roddy White yesterday.
Let's go, Andy. What you got for me today?
I'm going back to the well in that 2005 draft, your draft. What player drafted that year has the most career solo tackles?
Andy, I'm not even going front. I don't even know where to start. I mean, I guess I would go with Derek Johnson.
Can I take a guess?
He got it.
Yes.
He's the only middle linebacker to go in the first round.
You got it. Thomas Davis is about 100 tackles behind him. I think Thomas Davis is still active, but Derek Johnson is the correct answer.
Okay.
Chris is red, scalding hot with these questions.
Scalding hot. All right, Rick.
Nightmare matchup, too, by the way.
With your Nick Mangold, Rick.
By the way, too.
We're going to up the degree of difficulty a little bit today.
Yeah, by the way, too, Chris, nightmare matchup for Hunter Henry, too.
Man, you ain't going to never let that go, are you? Never.
Never. Never. What do you got, Andy? Come on.
All right. Last time the New York Jets drafted a player from a school in your former state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The last time
they drafted
the
somebody
New York
out of
Jets.
Mass.
I mean, Massachusetts is a hotbed. Absolute hotbed.
So think back to the schools, right?
You got BC. BU had no football program the year I went.
No.
UMass. Was it a high pick? Andy, was this like a second round pick? Vlad Dukas?
Lineman.
Dukas?
Yeah. Vlad Dukas is correct. Two for two again, guys.
Make my brain hurt.
But you made it, though. You made it.
I don't like this at all. When they do well, it puts even more pressure on me at the end here.
Dave, it's a Giants question. You're going to knock it right out of the park.
Yeah, yeah.
2014, Odell Beckham Jr. was the number 12 overall pick in the first round. My question to you is, in the last 50 years, only one wide receiver that's been drafted higher by the Giants in the first round, in other words, higher than 12, who is he?
I'm thinking Tucker Fredrickson right off the bat.
I said in the last 50 years.
He's not in the last 50?
Nope.
So am I going back to 1970 then? Is that how far I have to go back?
1970 to the present.
All right, so there's no way it's got to be way back there then, because there's no way you would give me 50 years if it's not some. It's got to be someone in the 70s, right?
No,
it's not.
No.
Well, Thomas Lewis was the first round pick, but he was not that.
Come on, David.
I don't know. I mean, he wants me to just run through every Giants draft.
Do it quick. Come on. This is why you have a beautiful mind. Come on. You can do it.
Mix was not that high.
3 for 3. Come on.
I don't know that I'm going to know it. He's a top 10 pick.
Come on.
I mean, Stacey Robinson, but he was not a first-round pick. I mean, what's going to happen is I'm just going to have to go through every draft in my mind, and that's going to take a very long time. Chris, do you know it?
I have no clue, Dave.
Thomas Lewis was much later in the first round.
I know who it is. Yeah.
He caught the first touchdown in the NFC Championship game, Andy, in 2000.
Is he a University of Florida wide receiver?
If you're thinking of Ike Hilliard, then that would be the answer.
The number 7 pick in the 1997 draft.
That is correct.
Okay. Ooh, God, all right. That felt good. Yeah. So we went 3 for 3.
Again, fantastic, guys. Stay healthy.
All right, there you have it. Oh, we really are unbelievable.
That was sneaky, though, by him. I mean, he threw you off with the whole 50-year thing.
Wouldn't you be thrown off with that as well?
Yes.
Like, I'm thinking back to the 70s.
Yeah, because there's got to be a reason. Like, that was like, yeah, I mean, the Mango question yesterday. I mean, it seems so obvious. I'm like, oh, there's got to be a reason why he's trying to trick me here.
Right. If he had said within the last 25 years, then you would have had, you know, more recent drafts to go through. But regardless, we go 3 for 3, so it's a good job by all of us. All right, 800-919-3776. We're going to get to the Jets in a moment. Quickly, let's go to, because I just love train and the truck. It's so swims together there. Train and the truck, you're on 98.7.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing? Everybody's all right?
Yeah, what's going on, buddy?
Can I just say really quick, Chris and Rick, you almost made me crash my truck, literally, with the beard connecting to the hair and then the Mark Davis. Oh, my God. I couldn't. I just couldn't. But real quick, I just wanted to ask, because, again, I don't know if you guys remember, but I'm about 30. Why did Jordan retire the second time? Like, I know why Ray Lewis retired, you know, Peyton Manning. Was it really just because of the Phil Jackson thing? Like, isn't that a little ridiculous? Or, like, do you guys think he still had some in the tank where he could have, you know, played without Phil and maybe try to win one without Phil? Like, is it really just the Phil thing? I just wanted to know, guys.
Well, he absolutely had something in the tank.
But here's the thing.
Why did he go, you know?
But here's the thing. When you're competing at a championship level, that's all you ever want to do. And it was clear that if Phil Jackson left, Michael Jordan felt like they would no longer be at that level.
Really? Wow. Yeah. I don't know. I guess, I mean, I don't want to say it says a lot about him, but I'm just like, man, like, you know, Kobe did it, you know, tried alone until he got power in him. I just thought, you know, I just found it weird. Like I said, I'm a lot younger, so I'm just like, man, did he retire really like, you know, like how Ray Lewis and Tim Duncan, they were done. So I was just curious, like, you know, was he done or, you know, that's all I wanted to know. Was it really just the Phil thing? That's all. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he retired then, and then, of course, he came back, and he went to the Wizards, and, you know, he never was the same player after that. But think about it. He retired, what, in early 99, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, Michael Jordan was how old? He was drafted in 84 at 21, so he's 36 years old. I mean, he's hardly a young guy at that point in his NBA career.
Yeah, he's not young, Dave, but I think the reason why he came back and he played for the Wizards is that he didn't realize how much he'd missed the game of basketball. And at that point, he knew he wasn't going to be competing for a championship, but it was more about having an opportunity to play the game that he loved just a little while longer. But I truly believe the reason why he retired that second time from the Bulls was because Phil Jackson was no longer going to be the coach.
Yeah, they already had Tim Ford in place. Yeah, I mean, they knew that he was going to be the next
coach. Well, how about that? Did you hear that Tim Floyd
where they did invite Phil
this morning?
No, who was he on this morning?
No, this was this. I mean, Santiago might have it. This was year they tried to get him. Jerry Krause tried to have him hired and Phil fired years before you heard about it in the documentary. I think he said 95, 96, they approached him to coach the Bulls.
Rick, let me ask you this question. Jerry Krause's motivation for wanting to move on from Phil Jackson, does it have anything to do with something other than ego? Because I can't figure it out.
No, it doesn't feel like it either, too. I mean, the fact that Jerry Krause, I mean, who knows if Phil Jackson becomes Phil Jackson if Jerry Krause doesn't take the initial risk on bringing Phil Jackson to the Bulls. You know what I mean?
No, you're right. But, I mean, once you realize that you have a dynastic team led by a coach that's capable of winning championships, why would you ever want to move on from the coach or the players?
You didn't like him.
Well, even if you don't like him, you're winning. What difference does it make? Since when is winning not enough? That's the part of it that does
Jerry
not make
Krause.
Sense.
But clearly, I don't disagree with you, but clearly to Jerry Krause, it did. I mean, Jerry Krause, you saw this documentary. Even if you didn't know a lot about him, he was a different kind of guy, right? He wasn't even an NBA guy. They bring him in. He thinks he could do whatever he wants to make it work. And you know what? Up till that point, he was right. So he didn't like Phil Jackson, and he wanted to move on from him. They just won three championships in a row. What team would move on from the head coach after winning three consecutive titles and 6 and 8 years?
Well, Jerry Jones moved on from Jimmy Johnson after they won two.
And that didn't work out so well either.
Well, they did win one with Switzer. But
if they would have kept Jimmy Johnson, if they would have kept Jimmy Johnson as the head coach of that team, they would have done a lot more winning.
Oh, 100%, Dave, but it speaks to exactly what I said yesterday. Age doesn't really end dynasties. It's usually the egos involved that force people to part company. And that's the part of it that seems even more evident when you watch this docuseries on the Last Dance with Jordan and the Bulls. Like, it wasn't about the team aging out as much as it was about Jerry Krause and Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan not being able to make it all work.
Well, I think the interesting thing, too, is, each person has their own definition of what success is. I mean, Chris, you play with guys whose definition of success is personal success and they could care less about wins or losses. And then, I mean, you saw with Kevin Durant. I mean, that team could have, I mean, if he signs a long-term deal in Golden State, who knows how many championships they win? But for him, he wanted to be recognized as not only the best player on the team, but it would be his team. That was his definition of success. Kyrie Irving didn't want to play with LeBron James. Does that make any sense?
No.
But when you know some of the backstory, you know why.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you know the backstory. But, I mean, it seemed like watching those first two episodes that clearly there was a lack of respect for Jerry Krause. I mean, you saw with Pippen and Jordan. They couldn't stand him, right? And then I just think that, I mean, once you've won a couple and you're not getting any credit for it, then now it becomes your goals become a little bit different, right? Like we've already won, like we've already got over that hurdle. We won. Now I want to win on my own terms, which means less about the coach, less about star players and more about, you know, the team. You heard what he said. He said he was misquoted. He wasn't misquoted.
No, he wasn't. I absolutely agree with you. He was not misquoted.
That's what he believed. And that's what he wanted to
believe. But the idea that this guy is the complete villain and they, you know, he had nothing and brought nothing to the table to help them win, I just think it's a bad look. I mean, this guy, if you look at the moves that he made, they're not winning if Jerry Krause is not pulling the trigger on these deals.
Yeah, but he had nothing to do with the biggest move, which was acquiring Michael Jordan.
Sure. That was Rod Thorne years before.
Yeah.
But if they don't bring in Scottie Pippen, I mean, it was a steal of a trade to bring in Scottie Pippen. And they bring in Horace Grant, and they bring in eventually Dennis Rodman, and they get Tony Kukoc from over in Europe. I mean, those moves are Jerry Krause moves. Jerry Krause, whether you like him or not, whether you respect him or not, you cannot deny the fact that he was a smart basketball guy. And I don't think they're winning nearly as much, if at all, if they don't make the moves that he made.
No, I'm not going to say that he wasn't a part of their success, but in terms of him being viewed as the most important part, I think that to me is the piece that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. To want the same amount of credit that Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan are getting for the dynastic run that they had in the 90s, that just wasn't going to happen because it wasn't true.
Well, I'm not going to argue
that. Yeah, it wasn't true. No, but Dave, why are you surprised? I mean, why is this documentary being shown now? Well, I mean, who's responsible for us getting a chance to see it?
Yeah, Michael Jeffrey.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So, I mean, he's gonna help create the narrative that he wants out there.
Of course.
And you can clearly tell he didn't like or respect Jerry Krause.
No. Well, they made fun of him. You know what I didn't like, honestly? And listen, Jerry Krause is easy to make fun of. He's an easy target. But you got to make fun of the guy being like overweight, and you got to make fun of the guy being short. And I'm just constantly
that's what you do in a locker
needle
room.
Him.
Well, that's what you do in a locker room. You want to be part of this. You want to pretend like you have.
But he's not in the locker room. He's not the starting shooting guard.
But he wanted to be. He wanted the same amount of credit that the players got. So if you want to be one of the players, we'll treat you like one of the players.
We will make it as uncomfortable as we possibly can for you when you're around. Even when Michael Jordan went away to play for the Birmingham Barons, he made Space Jam, and they had Jerry Krause in there and swack him. That's what it was. They were constantly making fun of this guy because they didn't like him.
Right.
Because Michael Jordan's early impression of Jerry Krause was that he didn't prioritize winning as much as you possibly could every single year.
That's what happens in the locker room,
true.
Dave.
They did not treat him with any respect, which is strange for a guy in that position.
Well, it's strange, but that's ultimately what happens. I mean, I could sit here and tell you story after story about, NHL players disrespecting their head coaches because they didn't feel like the head coach respected them as players.
But teams that are winning multiple championships?
Really good teams.
Wow.
With a really good coach that got abused, absolutely abused, because they didn't feel like he respected them as players. It was more about him and his system than it was the players actually playing the system. So, you're not going to respect me. I'm not going to respect you.
Let's go to John in the car. John, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. One of the things that Michael Jordan said clearly, and I, Dave and Rick, you're constantly wanting your teams to tank or not do as well, or rooting for them to lose so they get a better draft pick. I never hear Chris say that because Chris was a champion. A true champion never, never doesn't try to win.
But we've never said that.
Oh,
we've never said that the team should not try to win, ever, ever, ever. No, I'm going to tell you what we say, and if you want to quote us correctly. As a fan of the team, I think there's something about having a worse record and not having as many wins as having a better pick. I've never said that the players should not try to win games, ever.
As a fan of the team, how do you even think that way, though?
Because once the season is over, I mean, I understand what Michael Jordan was saying. He told the Chicago Bulls fans that he was gonna continue to make the playoffs. You have one game with the opportunity to make the playoffs or not make the playoffs. Of course, you should try to win that game. It would make no sense not to, because all of a sudden you're in the tournament. Who knows what the hell happens? You could win. I mean, you could get hot and compete for a championship. The point Dave and I always make is once your season is over and there's nothing to achieve by winning a meaningless game, then it's usually in the organization's best interest to lose as many games as possible at that point.
Case in point, week 16 for the New York Giants?
Yeah. John, how do you feel about that? Giants beat the Redskins in week 16. Daniel Jones throws 5 touchdowns. Now they have the 4 pick instead of the 2 pick. Was that a good win?
I was an athlete. I never wanted to lose in practice.
But, John, it's like you don't understand what we're saying. I'm not saying that the athlete should not try to win. I'm just saying to watch it from the outside, the best thing in an organization's best interest sometimes is to lose the game.
I understand where you're coming from, Dave, because you never played. Rick talks like he never played a game.
I have never once said that the players try to lose games. I mean, you're making something up in your mind. Not one player in a locker room is concerned about who's going to be the first round pick or where you're drafting in the first round because someone on your team is going to get replaced. You're always in the mindset, the more games you win, all the guys in that locker room that you love will be around a whole hell of a lot longer than if you're losing games. Because once you start losing too many games, things start changing. The coach you like gets fired. Your buddy that you go to dinner with every night, he gets traded. No player wants to lose. You're missing the point. I'm not speaking from the point of view of a player.
Dave's question then, in week 17, 16, whatever, Daniel Jones throws 5.
He's trying to win.
We win the game. I'm loving it.
Daniel Jones is trying to win.
But what did we ever knock Daniel Jones for trying to win that game? It wasn't Daniel. All I said is it would have been in the Giants' best interest, and Rick said it would have been in the Giants' best interest long-term to lose that game. You disagree with that?
Yes, that's a losing attitude.
I don't know what else to say to you then, because you're completely wrong. You couldn't be more wrong, John. So now when the Giants are going to take the fourth overall pick, who's not going to be Chase Young, who they say is generational, but they won that game, you feel good about that?
You always want to win.
All right. Listen, I'm not going to convince you that you're wrong. So we will move on, and we love the phone call.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous point.
But never once have we said the player should not try to win. Never one time.
Here's the thing, too, and we usually preface it, the comment was saying that no player tries to lose. It's an organizational decision,
yes,
whether or not you're going to tank or actively try or lose with a purpose. You'll be singing a whole different tune as a Giants fan, because not only did you win the game and now you have the fourth pick, you beat the Washington Redskins, who were in your division. So you're going to see Chase Young in that defensive line twice a season. Good luck with that.
It will never make sense. And I know that
when he's sitting on Daniel Jones's face, you tell me if you're happy.
Okay. Whew, spicy.
But what I do not like is people that take what we say out of context and then they try to throw something else back at me.
Well, Dave, you were upset that the Giants won that game.
I'm still upset that the Giants won the game, but I'm not blaming Daniel Jones for throwing five touchdowns.
No, I don't think anybody is. And you want your quarterback to have that kind of mentality that he wants to win every single time he gets under center in a game or in practice. He's trying to win. You want somebody that wants to win every single drill. It feels like the Giants have that. But now, as a result of winning that game, you're going to have to deal with somebody that they're calling the best pass rusher to have ever come out of Ohio State.
I mean, think about this. It's clear to everybody involved in the NFL who the second selection is, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And we have sat here and talked to Sal Pal and Renan and Samini. We have no idea what the Giants are going to do it for.
No, they'd actually like to trade back.
Right. But
you're not wrong. You don't have to defend your point. I mean, you, the organization, the GM, I mean, you're taking a long-term view. You're seeing the forest through the trees. Players, we're not, I mean, that's not how we're programmed.
Nor should
we're
you.
Focused. Exactly right. So we're not saying that players try to lose. It's the reality of sports. I mean, there'd be times during an Islander season when if I needed, you know, my hip done and we're already out of the playoffs, that I get a call and say, hey, you know what? We should probably get that hip taken care of. These games don't mean anything. Let's get you right so it doesn't affect next season. That's the reality. I mean, Chris always says shipping home the cars. It happens. This is what happens in sports, especially salary cap sports, when you're trying to get the best players as cheap as possible. And as much leverage as possible.
Yeah,
Could you imagine what the Redskins could get for that second overall pick?
Oh, it'd have to be RG3 territory in terms of compensation going back to them.
For a defensive end?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Chase Young and valuing him like you would value quarterbacks. Like, that's how much it would take. Remember, we were having a conversation about Joe Burrow and the Miami Dolphins being able to give them three first-round picks? I mean, that's what you would be talking about for Chase Young. Dave, they're saying the floor for this dude is double-digit sacks for a decade. The floor!
Yeah.
You're talking about the floor for a defensive end being a 100-sack guy.
Which is crazy.
Coming off the heels, I mean, the beauty of this, too, is it's off the directly off the heels of seeing what Nicky Bosa just did and the impact he had for the Niners.
They're saying an athletic standpoint, Nicky Bosa doesn't come close to what Chase Young is.
Right.
Doesn't come close.
And how good was he?
Exactly.
Right? That's frustrating. Today on ESPN Daily, Jerry Jeudy expected to be the number one receiver picked in this year's NFL draft, and he's endured great family tragedy along his path to football success. Hear a story on ESPN Daily with Mina Kimes. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. It's frustrating to me that people take what I say and you say, Rick, and it's completely out of context.
Yeah, I agree, but I mean, people choose to hear what they want to hear. I mean, what I've said about, you know, tanking is had nothing to do with, you know, the athlete or what players are trying to do when they're on the field, the ice, or the court. I mean, they're always trying to win,
as they should.
Yeah, but it's you as the organization trying to set your team up to, I mean, however you decide to do it, if it's having guys, you know, get surgeries that need surgeries, or, you know, shutting certain players down, who you decide to start. I mean, they're the ones that make that decision. I mean, look what Golden State's done. I mean, look what the Warriors have done. Clay's out. Steph Curry gets hurt. And they're like, you know what? This isn't going to be our year.
Right. And are they trying to lose games? No. But you just kind of can't help but lose games with the lineup you're putting out on the court every night.
Talk about the perfect season of Tank, though. I mean, this would be the one to throw in the towel, right?
Yeah. I mean, this will be to their benefit.
Yeah, 100%. Now, Rico, if you're the one that's responsible for getting your New York Jets turned around, if you got a choice between the third offensive tackle on your board or Jerry Jeudy, which direction would you go?
I would go tackle, I think.
Yep, so would I.
So even if it's the third tackle on the board, as far as how you have him rated, you would take the tackle over Jerry Jeudy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got to find a way in year three of Sam Darnold to protect him. And I feel like there's some really good – I mean, there's a lot of really good options at wide receiver in the second and third rounds.
There's a ton of them.
Yeah, depending on what you like. I love Jerry Jeudy. I mean, Jerry Judy's exactly what you would want for Sam Darnold, a guy who's, I mean, the best route runner in the draft. So, I mean, there's some consistency to that.
Yes.
And that, I mean, as a quarterback, too, you got to love that. Like, if you know, it's supposed to be, you know, 7 yards, it's going to be 7 yards. Like, he's going to be exactly where you need him to be. I love that. I just don't think with where this offensive line is at, I don't think you can risk not taking a tackle at 11.
Let's go to Joe in Overlook. Joe, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, guys. This is Joe. I work in the Overlook Hospital in Summit. I do blood work. I want to thank you for everything you've done to keep us up and to keep our spirits up. And Mr. Canty and Mr. DiPietro, when I was younger and I was in high school, I was trying to emulate my game between both of you. These are my idols. Thank you for doing it, and God bless.
Wow. Well, that's really nice.
That was really nice.
Really nice.
Here's the other thing, though, too, Chris. What if a concerns me a little bit, doesn't really concern me, but I feel like for some reason that Jerry Jeudy may be gone before 11.
I mean, there's a chance that could happen, but I mean, the teams that are picking in the top 10, there are some glaring needs that they have to address, and if you start looking at the positional value, it just seems like they would go in a different direction because you have so many quality wide receivers in this year's draft. Like, if you're a team picking in the top 10, you're up there for a reason. Like, you're bad. You have a lot of needs. And although wide receiver might be one of them, you can find a quality wide receiver in the second or third round. I mean, can you necessarily find a dominant interior defensive lineman? I mean, can you find a plug-and-play offensive tackle? I mean, those are going to be a lot harder to find in the latter round. So to me, if you're one of those teams in the top 10, you're probably going in a different direction, even though you might need a receiver. And so you're probably talking about the best receivers in this draft being pushed back to the back end of the top 10 or the top of, you know, the top of the next wave between 10 and 20.
All right, so Chris, let me turn it back on you.
Time out, quickly. I get what Chris is saying. I didn't mean that one of the teams in the top 10 necessarily would take him. I mean like a team like Jacksonville, who's clearly trying to be just awful this season. Maybe they trade out of 9 in a team that loves Jerry Jeudy and is afraid that the New York Jets would take him at 11, would move up to 9 to take Jerry Jeudy. Like maybe the Denver Broncos or someone like that.
Could happen. I mean, we'll see. We're a little more than 48 hours away from finding out that information. So Chris, let me ask you. You asked him the question. What are you inclined to do? Third offensive lineman or best wide receiver?
I'm going to be honest, boys. I'm probably going with wide receiver. I mean, there are three offensive tackles that I like at the top of this year's draft. The fourth guy, he concerns me a little bit. Mekhi Becton, I'm a little bit worried that there's a lot of bust potential there. So I would probably say if you're talking about Wills or Wirfs, then I don't think it's much of a conversation. If it's Andrew Thomas and Jerry Jeudy you're making a decision between, I could see it going either way, but I would probably lean toward Jerry Jeudy for a lot of the reasons that Rick outlined. I mean, he's the best route runner, they're saying, to come in the draft in the last 20 years. I mean, so he's going to be exactly where the playbook says he's supposed to be. And for a quarterback to be able to have a receiver that's out there that can dictate front and coverage, but more importantly, somebody that can be reliable and you're not going to have a whole lot of miscommunication issues with, I think that's something that's hard to put a value on. To me, I would probably go in that direction.
I wouldn't be upset either way. Listen, I like Jerry Jeudy a lot. I'm more interested
to see
if, well, yeah, I mean, you have to. And especially when you see, I mean, one of his comps is Calvin Ridley. And Calvin Ridley's had tons of success already. I mean, this early on in his career. So, I mean, it's a, you know, what Jerry Jeudy is is already a proven commodity in the NFL. I'm more interested to see if Joe Douglas stays at 11 or, I mean, does make the decision, if he can do it, to move back and get more picks.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, it's certainly there's so many questions to be answered, and we're closing in on the day that we're going to get all the questions answered, so we can't obviously wait for it. In these trying times, guys, important to remember we pulled together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 9870ESPN@gmail.com. Let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. All right, did you see the numbers The Last Dance did on Sunday night?
Yeah, crazy. Not surprised. I'm not shocked.
No, of course not, because everybody's trapped in their houses and there's no sports to watch. But it more than doubled the second best 30 for 30 we've ever seen.
Oh, it was doubled, yeah, I mean, the OJ one?
6 million.
Yeah, it doubled it. I mean, wow. It's insane.
Wow. It was good, Dave. I mean, it was outstanding. It was well produced.
It was great.
Yeah.
Oh, the lead up to it? I mean, it's a Sunday night. There's nothing on. It's Michael Jordan.
That's why it was so smart of them to move this thing up. Because if this got bare, I mean, if you had this still taking place in June or God knows when it was supposed to, and sports come back, it wouldn't have the same avenue that it has now.
No,
probably not.
No, it wouldn't have the same audience. But I think another reason why folks were so excited to see it is because we actually get to hear from Michael Jordan in his own words about what happened with those 90s Bulls. And I think being able to go behind the curtain and actually hear it from the horse's mouth, I mean, that's the thing that people wanted to lock in on. I mean, there was a mystique around Michael Jordan. I mean, this is one of those situations that you're talking about the greatest player of all time, and you're trying to figure out what made him so special, what made him the guy that was going to turn around the Chicago Bulls franchise and make them one of the more iconic organizations in the NBA. Like, this is the guy that was the biggest agent for change, and you actually got to hear how things unfolded, how things evolved, and what led up to them being one of the greatest basketball dynasties of all time.
Yeah, plus you had the hype too, Dave. I mean, for all the people that follow professional athletes on social media, I mean, you had almost everybody from all the different sports couldn't wait to see it, you know, commenting on it, what they saw.
I couldn't even go on Twitter on Sunday night. It was just everyone was like quoting every line that was said. It's like, can I just please watch it on my own?
Yeah, see, I like the interaction and what people were noticing and the little different takeaways that you had. I mean, the people that thought, you know, before they watched it, that there was hands down no way that anyone could be better than LeBron, and then you get a chance to watch it, relive it, and now all of a sudden you're like, whoa, now I see why Michael Jordan was the greatest. I think you'll get better numbers on this Sunday. I mean, you're going to get, I mean, part three is going to be Rodman. And if you've seen a tease for that, it's hilarious. And then you're going to have Phil in the second part.
Yeah, it's great for
ESPN. Did you see the tease for the third episode with Rodman?
Yes.
I didn't.
How funny is that?
I didn't see it.
You haven't seen it yet?
No.
So it's Jordan saying that Dennis told, so Phil Jackson brings in Jordan and tells him that Dennis just let him know that when Scotty comes back, Dennis is going to need a vacation. Jordan's like, what do you mean a vacation? Yeah, he's going to need some time away. And Jordan goes, if anyone needs a vacation, it's me. He goes, well, you know, what if we just give him 2 days and let him go to Vegas? And Jordan's like, you realize if you let him go to Vegas, we're not getting Dennis back. It's going to be a good episode. I can't wait for that one.
That's going to be really fun to watch.
They're all great. They're great. And this is, listen, there's not a lot of positives that are coming out of this right now, but one of the positives is you're locked in your house. There's not a ton of stuff to do. There's no other sports to watch. There's not a ton of great television going on right now. It is the perfect time for this thing to have been released. And we said it back even before they announced they were going to release it, right? When it was going to come out in June and we were excited about it, and they were promoting this thing 6 months out. But when we started to get locked away, I remember the conversation. We said, you absolutely have to move this up because it's going to do so well, and the numbers are astronomical already.
And good on the company for making that decision to release it early because, I mean, you're going to have a huge audience. It's going to maximize the visibility of it, like you already mentioned. But, I mean, one of the cool things to see that came out of Sunday night is how many athletes that Michael Jordan influenced, man. Just seeing the reaction from all of the guys around Twitter. Like, I remember Dwayne Wade's tweet and him talking about how the 91 Bulls is what made him decide to go down the path he went down to become the very best basketball player he could be and eventually a world champion. But I mean, that's the true mark of greatness to me. When you have somebody whose performance inspired so many other people, influenced so many other people in order to reach that level, and to have that type of charisma in doing it. You know what I mean? Like, Michael Jordan is the blueprint for the modern day athlete in terms of what you want on the court or on your respective field of play, but then how you want to brand yourself outside of your sport. So Michael Jordan had it all.
He really did. He hasn't played in decades, and we still revere him. You don't get a ton of that. I mean, you don't look back at athletes 20, 30, 40 years ago and just have everybody wax poetic about how great they were and how great they would be in this day and age. It's not common.
Yeah, but Dave, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, maybe the greatest of all time who transcended the sport.
I understand.
That's my point. No, it's a good point, but because of the way he built his brand. I mean, what he's been able to do. I mean, he's done everything any athlete could ever dream about doing. It makes him so relevant. I mean, he owns an NBA basketball team. How could he not be relevant? People can't wait to get a Jordan sneaker when it drops.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy's done everything.
Everything.
Health-wise, doesn't look great, but I mean, besides that.
I think he looks good.
No.
You don't think?
Do you think his eyes are supposed to look like?
I think his eyes are a little bloodshot. But other than that, he's late 50s. I think he looks good.
I didn't think he looked great.
I would agree with you on the eyes.
For 57 years old, he looks pretty good.
No, he looks all right. The eye thing concerned me a little bit, but that's just me. I mean, I'm nitpicking at this point. Good on him, though.
Right? If that's thing we're talking about, damn near 60 years old.
No, but seriously though, good on him to have the foresight to do. I mean, to have that team following around with the cameras, to have that, you don't have the opportunity to share that whenever you decided.
Yeah, that is good, because he probably realized one day I won't be the forefront of everybody's basketball thoughts, and this can bring me back to that stage.
Well, I mean, how often do you go into a season knowing that it will be your coach's last year, and then thereby it will be the star player's last year with that franchise?
Right. The coach is probably going to be done. I'm probably going to be done, and we have a great chance to win a championship. How often does that happen?
It doesn't happen often, but that I can understand why you would want to maximize the media coverage and why you would want a camera crew to follow you around and document it, because it is the last dance, appropriately titled. Phil Jackson said that was going to be the theme going into this season, and they were able to unite everybody in that organization. Well, not everybody, but the coaches and the players, they were able to unite everybody with a common enemy in Jerry Krause. And how often does Rick talk about it with sports, when you have a team unite against a common enemy, how close that makes that team? That's point in case, the 97-98 Bulls.
Yep. And we got 8 more episodes starting this Sunday, 9 o'clock, keeping Rick up way past his bedtime on the Sunday night. So Rick had a hot take. And now I'm reading something that makes it sound like maybe there's a chance that this, in fact, does happen. I know you're a big fan of the Bravo network, aren't you, Rick?
Love me some Bravo, yeah.
You're a big fan of Andy Cohen, right?
I like Andy Cohen, yeah. I mean, he is responsible for The Housewives.
So I guess he has a show, which I'm not overly familiar with, and it's going to air tonight. And Rob Gronkowski, the former tight end for the New England Patriots, is going to be on the show. Would you like to hear a quote of what Gronk has to say?
I have some respect, too, though. He is the current WWE 24/7 champion also.
So you think I should lead with he's the WWE champion over the Patriot greatness?
Yeah, because that's who he currently wears. I mean, he currently works for WWE. So, yeah, I mean, that's probably his title, right?
All right. So so what is he then? The WWE champion?
24/7 champion.
What does that mean?
Which means he's you can take on Rob Gronkowski 24 hours a day. Whenever you see him, you can... The title is up for grabs.
So you could just be in the supermarket, socially distanced, you see him, and you just go after him.
Exactly right. Like, you could pull a Ron Hainsey and just decide you want to stun somebody in the middle of the hallway.
Right. I like that. So he's got to have his head on a swivel then, Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, exactly right. He can be tried at any moment.
So you think Andy Cohen took a shot at him tonight?
Probably not. Probably not.
I would agree with that. All right, so here's what the 24/7 champion and former Patriot tight end had to say. Quote, "I'm feeling good right now. I'm happy where I'm at, but you never know, man. You just never know. I'm not totally done. I just got to get that feeling back." How about that?
Yeah, but this is, for me, no surprise. I mean, the people I talked to that knew him personally said that towards the end with the Patriots, like for him to get himself on the field for game days was, they couldn't believe he could do it. Like he was that banged up at the end. And Chris knows this one. I mean, the end of your career, when you're that banged up and it hurts as much as it does to try to get yourself ready, you got to be there, you know, 4 or 5 hours before games to try to get yourself loose. You're taking, you know, multiple Toradol shots. That's not fun anymore. No one wants to be a part of that. But all of a sudden you're away. You feel bad. Your body heals up. You're starting to feel healthy. He'll be 31 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time has called you multiple times. Hey, it's not as hard here in Tampa. Weather's beautiful. You'll like the coach. Come on, man. I would 100% if I was Rob Gronkowski come back and play with the Bucs and Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, it would make all the sense in the world. Now, it's a matter of dealing with the New England Patriots in order to get his rights because they still retain him. But, I mean, Gronk going down there to join the glut of weapons that Tom Brady would have with that Bucs offense, yeah, I can make some sense of that. And then Gronkowski doesn't have to worry about having to be the focal point of that passing attack. That won't be the situation. It'll be Mike Evans. It'll be Chris Godwin. So he'll have an opportunity to have one-on-one situations. And how deadly would that be with Rob Gronkowski one-on-one against a linebacker or a safety? Forget about it.
Yeah, forget about it. I mean, and if you keep O.J. Howard, if you have Gronk, Howard, Evans.
No, you can't. You're not going to. They're not. No. They're not going to keep O.J. Howard.
Yeah, O.J. Howard's going to be traded this weekend.
All right, so you know what? You think they trade him regardless? You think he's not a member of the Bucs anymore?
Yeah, I think he's out.
All right, so let me redo it then. Gronk, Brate, Godwin, Evans, still pretty daunting, no?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I like the chances. Yeah, I like the chances.
All right, let's go to Scotty, Long Island.
But,
Scott. Yeah,
but
go
Dave,
ahead.
Here's the other thing, though, too, to take into account. What makes this year kind of different than, you know, maybe would incentivize me maybe a little bit more if I was Rob Gronkowski. If you thought the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had a legitimate chance to compete for a championship, the fact that the Super Bowl is in Tampa this year, I mean, that's pretty unique circumstances.
What's a legitimate chance, though?
Oh, a legitimate chance? I mean,
I would be very surprised if Tampa Bay won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but the Bucs were 7-9 last year with a quarterback that threw 30 interceptions.
Listen, I think they have
I would be shocked if Tampa's not in the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, so if you're in the playoffs, then you have a chance at competing for a championship, no? You're one of 14 teams.
You have a chance. Yeah, you have a chance. I would agree with that.
All right.
I mean, yeah, like Chris just said, I mean, and he had a quarterback. Forget that. I mean, of the 30 interceptions, you know, 7 of them were pick sixes. So, I mean, you're talking about those points, not to mention, you know, where on the field that Jameis Winston put his defense, and their defense was still one of the better defenses at the end of the season in the league.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons to believe that this Bucs team could be one of those teams. You know, they always say that there's, what, 5 or 6 teams every year that didn't make the playoffs that all of a sudden turn on the next year and make the playoffs?
Oh, that's already, whether he comes back or not, they have to be one of those teams already.
Yeah, to Chris's point, exactly right. I mean, are you the best team in the NFC? No, probably not. But if all of a sudden, I mean, you're one of the better teams in the NFC in the playoffs, and oh, by the way, Tom Brady's your quarterback, I mean, I would probably sign up for that.
The Bucs legitimately were a quarterback away, and they got the greatest quarterback of all time.
I like my chances. Although I will say this, too, and there's a reason, so people know that listen to the show and listen to 12:30 for observations while we tell you these stories, because when you go to Florida, weird stuff happens, and you could catch Floridian. It happened to Tom Brady. It can happen to you.
Floridian.
You can catch it.
Yeah.
You saw what happened to Tom Brady.
I mean, you might as well tell people because, I mean, we blew up in observations today.
Yeah, Tom Brady got a citation for getting a workout in the park that was supposed to be closed. all the parks are closed. So I guess then because the parks are closed that they have more people patrolling to make sure that no one's in the parks. So they pull up, see someone in the park, get out of their vehicle, and it turns out that it was actually Tom Brady in the park working out.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because if you've seen this house, like, why would you need to go anywhere?
Right. I mean, he's living in a, what is it, 20,000 square foot mansion?
30,000.
I'm sorry to take away 10,000 square feet. 30,000 square feet. You could live in the same home as 10 other people and not see them for weeks.
Yeah, but something happens. I'm telling you, all of a sudden you move down to Florida.
You think he caught Florida?
There's no state tax, but all of a sudden the wires did. The wires start crossing, man. Weird things happen.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.